From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
There is another pandemic going on out there, one that has killed billions. Whole populations have been completely wiped out by a disease that causes the legs of infected individuals to drop off before the victims melt into puddles of gooey slime. The victims in this case are an enormous starfish called the sunflower sea star, and they are on track to receive protection under the Federal Endangered Species Act. As reported by Yareth Rosen of the Alaska Beacon, federal regulators announced in mid-March that they are proposing a threatened listing for the sunflower sea star. The creature has been killed off in much of its Pacific habitat by disease. While the effect of a listing on Alaska and its fisheries is not certain, scientists say they don't expect significant changes in the state in the near term. Sunflower sea stars are found from Baja California to Alaska's Aleutian Islands. They can grow up to 24 legs and be as big as 3 feet in diameter. If the listing goes through, it will be the first for any sea star under the Endangered Species Act. A disease called sea star wasting syndrome has wiped out about 90% of the animals across its vast range, according to federal scientists. It has hit a variety of sea star species, though the sunflower sea stars have suffered especially severe harm. Climate change may be behind the disease. The arrival of Pacific marine heat waves has coincided with outbreaks of it. The heaviest impacts of the disease have been in the southern areas of the species range. There have been less severe impacts in Alaska and other northern areas, but the listing would cover sunflower sea stars over their entire range. That's because the Endangered Species Act does not allow listings of invertebrates to be broken down into distinct population segments, which is the case in Alaska with endangered western Steller sea lions and Cook Inlet beluga whales. Officials with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and Alaska fishing organizations have previously expressed concerns about the wide geographic span the listing would affect.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Here is NOAA Public Affairs Officer Michael Milstein during a press conference last week announcing that sunflower sea stars are to be tentatively listed as threatened rather than endangered.
We have lost billions of these animals in the last decade, but an estimated 600 million still remain in the wild. Listing the species as threatened would recognize this rapid decline. While a threatened listing would not automatically carry the same protections as an endangered listing, it would ensure that federal actions such as decisions on shoreline use, protect the listed species.
KUOW's John Ryan had a question about that.
So if the population has declined 90% or more, kind of up and down the coast, I wonder why only a threatened level of protection and not endangered? I mean, how much worse off would a species have to get to qualify for endangered species status?
Here is the answer from NOAA biologist Dave Lowry.
An important thing to note here is that the coverage that's been provided for sunflower sea stars is relatively minor in many areas. There are very concerted dive surveys, some trawl survey efforts, some other things that detect the species, but there's also a lot of places that simply aren't sampled well. And where we do have data, we do have occurrence of both adults and of juveniles, newly settled juveniles, in many locations. Another consideration here is the SeaStar Wasting Syndrome pandemic was massive losses occurred from 2013 to 17, but was relatively less impactful after that. And so there are some areas where healthy populations are currently known to exist and monitoring is underway. And we're also trying to concertedly fill in gaps for these areas that we don't have sufficient monitoring effort. So the hope is that with this threatened listing, it will prompt some additional monitoring effort and potentially allow us to push some federal funds specifically towards such monitoring efforts and reporting efforts.
So they just don't have enough data to be really sure they're endangered and are hoping for a recovery anyway, now that the marine heat wave has slacked off a bit. But what would a threatened listing mean?
There's multiple things that occur as a result of this threatened listing. First and foremost, if the species is ultimately listed, any activity that's funded by or authorized by the federal government would have to go through a Section 7 consultation that would incorporate consideration of this species. So even without critical habitat designation, we would still be considering the actions and the impacts to the species of federally associated activities.
So any federal activity, like a fishery management plan, would be required to consider the effects on sunflower sea stars. Does that mean they will designate critical habitat that is especially important to the recovery?
We are not proposing to designate critical habitat at this time, and the reason for that is our determination that it's indeterminable. And what that essentially means is we don't have enough information about where this animal occurs and in which habitats it's associated with to designate critical habitat appropriately. We know that it occurs around kelp forests. We know that it's a part of that ecosystem and an integral part of it. But the animal is also found over rock piles, sand, mud flats, eelgrass meadows. It's found all over the place. And essentially any technique we've used to look for the species, we tend to find it. So it uses a broad array of different habitats. And we don't have documentation of specific areas that might be really critically important to the animal, such as spawning grounds or very specific feeding areas or anything like that. So at this point, we're saying the animal is protected anywhere and everywhere you encounter it, but we don't have enough information to really drill down and specify some certain habitats or locations. We do, in the proposed rule, though, ask for additional information on that. So we're certainly soliciting that so that we can utilize that in the final rule as appropriate.
So again, they just don't know enough to designate critical habitat, but that could happen when they do know more. But sea stars are commonly caught along with target species. Does that mean caps on sea star bycatch could be set for directed fisheries?
We know that this species is encountered as bycatch in a variety of different fisheries. We know that there are potentially some impacts on the species. But often what gets reported in the fisheries is sea star unidentified, so they don't actually say it's Pycnopodia. So if this species is listed, and even prior to it being listed, we're working on this with some conservation partners, we're trying to increase the specificity with which they're reporting sea star bycatch in any and all fisheries. And if the species is listed and we get enough additional information to show that the impacts are particular to this species in any given fishery, then we could potentially put some regulations in place there to try and help with that and try to reduce the impact of those fisheries. But to date, essentially what we're trying to do is get a better reporting and a better monitoring system for the bycatch of the species.
Once again, they don't have enough information. But it could happen when they do have the data. Should fishermen be worried? Here is NOAA National Listing Coordinator, Lisa Manning.
The primary threat that our status review team identified for the sunflower sea star is the sea star wasting syndrome. Fisheries, along with a number of other factors, were identified to be relatively low-level threats to the species. So while we want to work with commercial fisheries and the fishery management councils to gather more information and promote safe handling of sea stars that are bycatch in fisheries, we don't anticipate significant changes to fisheries as an outcome of this proposed rule. We want to gather more information in the in the year ahead.
Lisa, do you want to describe the next steps in the process?
Yeah, so tomorrow the proposed rule will publish, and that will open the 60-day public comment period, so that puts us about mid-May for that to close, and then within a year, one of three things could happen. We either finalize the rule as proposed 1 year from tomorrow, we change the final rule, you know, for example, we propose solicit as threatened, that could change in the final rule, and the third outcome is that we have is we could withdraw the proposed rule for some reason, say we found out this is not a species or something. So one of those three things are going to happen a year from now. And that would be, those would all be final actions. If the rule is finalized as proposed, meaning we list it as a threatened species, Section 7 requirements would come into play. That would be the additional regulatory protection. If the species is listed as endangered, we would be in a different scenario. All of the prohibitions of Section 9 of the ESA, which include prohibitions on import, export, taking the species, et cetera, and commercial activity of the species, that would all be prohibited upon listing. So it depends on what ends up happening in the final rule.
In other words, when the final rule comes out 1 year from now, the designation could be either threatened or endangered with very different consequences. A threatened designation requires consultation, while an endangered designation prohibits most interactions with the endangered species, including the take of the species within the U.S. EEZ. Despite reassurances from NOAA, fishermen might well hope for a quick recovery. Governor Mike Dunleavy has nominated an executive at Coastal Villages Region Fund as his top choice to serve on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Ruichi Rudy Sukata is the chief operating officer at Coastal Villages. That's one of six Western Alaska nonprofits that own catch shares in the Bering Sea fisheries through the Community Development Quota Program. Sukata's employer also owns a Bering Sea factory trawler. The nomination, if approved by the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, would continue the tradition of seating members on the North Pacific Council with roots in the pollock industry. The selection disappointed advocates for small boat fishermen, subsistence users, and native communities who are calling for more diversity on the council. Dunleavy, in his nomination letter, said the state makes an effort to seek out women, people of color, and people from historically underrepresented communities. He said Sukata is known in sport fishing circles in South Central Alaska for helping to popularize kayak angling, fishing for halibut and salmon from a kayak.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896. Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.